This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
Welcome to Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9, Conrad Bodman. Okay. Now, you are, I believe, the curator of Game Masters.
Game Masters.
Nice. Oh, very good. And that's the exhibition coming very soon to the Australian Centre for the Moving Image, or ACMI, or ACMI. And it's in June. And I guess one of the first questions for our listeners is, where was your involvement to begin with this project? When did it start for you?
Well, I've been working on this idea for about 2 years now. I've developed a number of video games exhibitions in the past. We did a big show at ACMI about 4 years ago called Game On, which is a sort of survey, a history of video games, which was really, really successful. And I was thinking of ways to follow up that exhibition. And one of the things that occurred to me at the end of that show was that people really didn't know who made games, you know, who the people were that were behind games. You know, people have got a big awareness of the history of video games over the last 40 years, but not many people who work in the industry are really known by name. You know, we know our big artists, we know our big filmmakers, you know. But who are the people, who are the legendary people that make video games? And there are a number of people that are out there that have been working for many, many years and have built up big portfolios of work. So I really wanted to kind of flag them, name check them, and talk a little bit about the process that they go through in terms of coming up with ideas, developing their games, and, you know, the teams that they work with who are so important that they surround themselves with. So that was the whole notion, really celebrate auteurship in the whole world of video games, and to recognise that video games have got a long history now over the last 40 years.
Yep, true.
And that a number of people have floated to the top. I mean, it's quite strange in a way because, you know, whilst the video games industry really celebrates its great names, if you go to any big industry event, you know, like E3 in Los Angeles and so on, all of the great names in the video game world are there and talking at professional events and so on. But very few get the name check on the box, you know.
I mean, there,
there are a few that differ, like Hideo Kojima, the very famous Japanese developer who always has his name on top of the box. And I guess the British developer Peter Molyneux is pretty well known kind of outside of the field. And there are those big names like Will Wright, the father of the sort of sim game kind of genre, and Shigeru Miyamoto, who's the sort of creator of Mario and big influence at Nintendo, of course. But so the idea was to really celebrate the auteurs of video games, the game masters, if you like. And it took 2 years really to put the project together, to structure it and shape it and nourish it and get the right content there. But we feel very proud of the show, and it really gives a fantastic insight in terms of what's gone on in the games industry over the last 40 years, and really structured to some extent around a sort of historical trajectory, starting off with a section called Arcade Heroes, looks at the key arcade game developers in the sort of golden age of video games in the late 70s and early 80s, and tracks through another section called Game Changers, which looks at sort of 12 major figures in the video game field and talks about their work in quite some detail. And then finally, we have a big section on indie game developers, which is, you know, I guess where games are really flourishing today. It's that whole mobile domain,
yeah,
you
definitely.
Know. And but throughout this project, our real focus was having a lot of playable games there for people to come in and sample, you know. And if you come to ACMI, whilst the exhibition's on, you'll be able to play 125 playable games and spend as much time as you like in the gallery, really sort of getting familiar with the games you probably know and love and others that you perhaps haven't come across before. Yeah,
very exciting. What can I say? You pretty much said it all in the first question in a nutshell. But what makes Game Masters different from the previous exhibition? You mentioned Game On just briefly. Now, that was an exhibition that attracted a heap of people considering, you know, in Melbourne. I believe looking online, I found that, you know, Australia attracted something like almost 100,000 people through the doors. And I believe the Barbican Art Gallery, where it was hosted first in London. No, actually, sorry, I've got that wrong. 117,000 in Melbourne and almost 100,000 in London. You know, that just shows the popularity in Australia. Do you think there's any reason behind that?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I curated the Game On exhibition originally when it was in London and then moved out here to Australia. And that show's been touring around the world for 10 years, you know, and it's been to throughout the States, throughout Europe. It's been to South America, and it's been incredibly successful. I think, you know, that show was really sort of a way of validating video games as a sort of cultural force, I think, and that's why it was so important. I think a lot of gamers came to see that show, both in London and in Melbourne, and sort of felt, wow, you know, cultural institutions are really recognising kind of this area that I know and love, kind of in a in a broader context, and that was really important for people. So yeah, that was a bit of a landmark of an exhibition, and of course this year has been an amazing sort of year for video games and cultural institutions. The Smithsonian Institution in Washington have got this show on called The Art of Video Games, which opened a few years ago, which is really sort of, I guess, looking at video games as an art form. There's been another show on at the Grand Palais in Paris, which again is another celebration of the history of video games, and now Game Masters. So, you know, cultural institutions are really sort of, you know, recognising this whole area. I mean, there's a whole debate, of course, around the issue of whether video games are art or entertainment. And yes. I guess the Smithsonian show really takes the ball by the horns, and it's their show's The Art of Video Games, and it's really making that case for video games as a sort of fine art. And I don't think we're really doing that at Acme. We are. I think we're saying that video games are a force within the entertainment media, you know, in the same way as film and television and other areas of moving image practice like contemporary art.
It sort of reminds me a little bit like perhaps the forms of comics.
Yeah.
Because comics aren't quite the high end of art. I don't know if there's anything comparable at the Smithsonian. Perhaps there's a couple of Batmans snuck
maybe
away there. But video games seems to be the more contemporary, present form of celebrating the higher end of just pop culture.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it's because it's such a, I mean, I guess there's a trajectory with media forms in general. I mean, when film was first established, you know, no one knew who the actors were, and as time went on, actors became credited, and they're now recognised as major stars, you know, in the golden age of Hollywood and so on. That's when it all happened, really. And I think that the same is happening with video games. There's now a kind of a desire to kind of learn more about the games and to understand the depth and layering and complexities of games and how they're made. So I think exhibitions like Game Masters and The Art of Video Games at the Smithsonian really sort of recognising this and, you know, beginning to understand that this area needs to be kind of studied and archived in a probably in a new way. You know, it's not, we're not talking about painting and sculpture here. We're talking about kind of software and hardware.
Yes,
and
very, you know, accessible.
Yeah, it's very accessible.
Everyone, yes.
But you know, one of the things about putting a show like this together is that there aren't any collections that you can go to. I mean, I couldn't, when we've been preparing the exhibition, we haven't been able to go to the Smithsonian and borrow you know, the five best American arcade games, for example, because there aren't collections like that in cultural institutions. So we've had to kind of, you know, reach out to the collectors, who the people who are passionate about games,
the fans,
the
I
fans
guess.
Yeah, so we're working with fandom in one way or another. And you know, that we've met lots of really great people, particularly in Australia, some amazing collectors whose work will be kind of showcased in the exhibition. People who are sort of doing their own thing, they're buying games on eBay, going to swap meets, and, you know, have an online presence, really, and a lot of followers. But they wouldn't be that well known kind of to the general public, but have really been providing us with the assets to put the show together. As have the developers we're working with, who have also, some of them have been really canny and realised that their work is important, and they've archived it and kind of employed museum professionals to come and work with them to help kind of look after that material. So some of the big American developers like Blizzard, for example, who make Diablo and World of Warcraft and StarCraft, I mean, they've got their own curators.
They already know.
They've been really archiving their work and preserving it and showing it in other exhibitions around the world. So we've had access to that material, which has been great.
Well, I was very privileged to go along to see the Melbourne Symphony Orchestra along with a choir there to perform music, the compositions from some of those games you just mentioned, StarCraft and Blizzard as well. Amazing.
Oh, it's
amazing.
Incredible.
Takes it to another level.
The whole games and sound, games and music area is a whole kind of, you know, art form in its own right, really. And, you know, it's very popular. You know, the people's memories of the games themselves are kind of ignited by the soundtrack and the music and the sound effects that go with them.
Yeah, the memories that it, you know, when you hear, for some people it's Pac-Man, for much older players, And I guess more recent times, it might be something that the themes from Soul Calibur, like we were talking about before, because they've kept a consistency of that particular sound
exactly
all the way through. Exactly. It's like people's personal Simpsons.
Yeah.
Because they can interact. Unlike a television program where you can't be part of the story, you can actually involve yourself in these games and you can change things within it.
You can. I mean, one of the big focuses of the Game Masters exhibition is this whole area of music, kind of light, sound, colour interaction, and the way that all these things come together. So we've got a number of music-focused games in the exhibition. You know, like one of the female developers that we're focusing on called Paulina Bozek, who created a sort of Sony franchise called SingStar, which is kind of a karaoke game.
Yeah, very popular.
So still really popular. You know, it's been out there for a number of years now. But I guess that really sort of melded kind of traditional karaoke with gameplay and in a really fun party focused environment, and we're showcasing that game as a two-player game in the exhibition. But also
are you doing that in a soundproof room?
We are we've got this case. I mean, just to sort of conjure what this might look like for you. This amazing kind of fluoro plexi boxes kind of in the space that you can go into. Lots of vibrant pinks and oranges and yellows and so on, and you go into the space and you can go in with your friends and sort of play SingStar. It's a lot of fun.
Sounds very Japanese.
It does
actually.
And in the same section we've got Tetsuya Mizuguchi, who's the guy that created Rez, which was this sort of very, you know, very well-known game in the sort of around the turn of the millennium. It's essentially a shoot 'em up game with a sort of real trance soundtrack that a lot of people played and kind of got really into. He's got a new game that came out last year called Child of Eden, which has got an amazing soundtrack. And it's sort of, he's, as well as being a video game kind of developer director, he's also got, as a lot of Japanese game directors have, a real interest in music. And there's this band called the Genki Rockets, which is a sort of almost like a fictional band that he's created. That sort of appear, and both kind of in an audio and visual sense within this game, which is really sort of hypnotic. And we're showing Child of Eden in 3D in the in the exhibition, this very sort of immersive sensory space. So that's going to be wonderful. And then we're, in addition to that, we're looking at Alex Rigopoulos and Aran Agosi, who are the sort of creators of Guitar Hero and Rock Band. And very, very important kind of within this whole area of kind of music and video game crossover. Guitar Hero being a sort of huge kind of influence, bringing a lot of people interested in music into the whole world of games.
There are, like, I noticed a guy the other night was doing air Guitar Hero in the street.
It's incredible.
Totally bizarre. It's taken it to another level.
Completely.
But
completely.
They're right into it. And
they are. So, you, Rock Band is the game we're focusing on, and which is the sort of, you know, four-piece setup with the singer and the drums and the bass and so on. And they also make the Dance Central series of games as well. So where you can kind of literally perform within the space. So we've set up this great sort of performance sort of stage space. You can kind of get up and dance
to
your favourite tunes.
So people will be, what, they'll get a token and it's their turn to go up? Or how does it work?
So you can, you'll just be able to queue up if it's busy, and you know, we'll have a member of staff there to help you set yourself up. I mean, it's it's on the Kinect setup, you know, on the Xbox. So, which the camera looks at you and maps your body, and then you can kind of like play the game and interact with the dancers that appear on stage. So you have to dance in time to the music, get the moves right, and if you do, you beat your opponent. So it's a great fun. Yeah. So music's a really kind of you know, important component to the exhibition. I mean, one of the things that's the problem for us is actually controlling it. You know, because some of the sound obviously needs to be more focused. But you know, we kind of like that arcade aesthetic. I think when you come into the gallery, there'll probably be a real blitz of sound, and
so
that'll be great.
Will it be a bit like the first Tron film? Is it going to be, we walk in, we're going to have arcade games, traditional retro look?
That's right. So you come into the space, and the first section you walk into is a section called Arcade Heroes. So within that section, we're looking at, we've got 16 vintage arcade games. So that ranges from Defender to Pac-Man to Robotron. you know, that so Space Invaders, that kind of variety. So they're set within this sort of quite retro kind of 70s arcade.
Have you got Gallagher?
Feel. We've got Gallagher.
Yes,
yep.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, we've had to buy all these arcade games, so it's been a lot of fun kind of tracking them all down and getting them ready for the show, of
and,
course.
And finding them, have you sort of, like, received, obviously you've gone out there and promoted it and said to people, I guess through word of mouth, pretty much, has it been like that?
Yeah, it's really, as I was saying before, it's through the collectors' networks. So we've got, there's a big collector that I know from my days in the UK called Andy Welburn, who's been helping us sort of acquire the games. And they've all largely come from collector networks in the US and also in Europe. But, you know, we've got a lot of contacts with the collector community in Australia. So we've actually got a little collective of collectors who are helping us, you know, look after the games whilst they're in the game.
Joel Hopkins, is he sort of like one of the leading lights in that area?
He is, yeah.
Australian?
Yeah,
or so Melbournean, isn't he?
He's a Melbournean, yeah. Mm-hmm. He's a big collector and he's got his own website. And I think he's got 20,000 followers. So it's a big community.
That's
of people
huge.
That
I was looking at his site today, actually.
Yeah,
it's. It's so chocker with information and, yeah, it's just full on.
Yeah, it is. And I think, I mean, he's one of the developers we're looking at in the second section of the exhibition, which is called Game Changers, is a guy, Japanese arcade developer called Yu Suzuki, who I guess really sort of was the first person to really kind of think about physical interaction and gameplay and how that might work. So he created a lot of big arcade games like OutRun and Hang On, which is a motorbike kind of racing simulator where
you'd actually
get on the motorbike and drive it and so on.
Right.
So it's one of the first sort of big simulators in arcades.
The
so
driving ones, was he behind some of those too?
Yeah. So
the early ones.
Yeah, OutRun is one of the
OutRun,
kind
of
driving
of course,
car games, yeah. So he's really important, and Joel is a big collector of Yu Suzuki arcade games, so which you'll see on his website. So he's been.
Have they met each other?
I don't think they have, actually. I mean, in fact, I was really lucky because I was able to go to Japan when I was researching the show and met up with Yu Suzuki in Tokyo. And yeah, I think that's sort of Joel's dream to have that experience.
Oh,
I was,
that'd be fun on opening night. Two worlds collide.
Yeah. So it's anyway, we've got a lot of the developers coming over for the opening, and it's great that we'll be able to hear from them, you know, and hear them talking about their work.
So can you tell us who some of these developers are? Like, I've seen a little list, but...
I can. So we've got Peter Molyneux coming over from the UK. He's, you know, most well-known from his company called Lionhead. And,
Lionhead.
He made games like Black and White and so on. And then more recently has been working at Microsoft. He's just left there to set up his own company.
Oh, cool.
So he's a big figure in the UK kind of games industry, and has been a big sort of spokesman, you know, I guess provocateur, really, and out there really getting the industry kind of more widely known. So it's really, really important. So he's going to be doing a big masterclass or a big public event and also doing a whole series of professional events and engaging with the local developer community in Melbourne, which is fantastic. So people get the chance to meet him. Tim Schafer from Double Fine in the US. He's had a sort of such an amazing career, really, starting working on the Secret of Monkey Island games kind of with LucasArts kind of in the early days, but now with his own kind of company called Double Fine, still making lots of games, working now more in the sort of area of the iPhone and with download kind of side of things. Yeah. And yeah, doing really well. So Tim's going to be coming over to talk about his work and games like Psychonauts and Brutal Legend, which is another, of course, great riff on heavy metal, you know, with Jack Black did the soundtrack for that, which is incredible, this sort of great heavy rock kind of theme to it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so it should be a lot of fun having Tim out. He's been in the games industry really for the last 30 years and knows it really well and has changed
What generation are we looking at? How old are these guys?
Well, I mean, the guys that are coming over, I guess, are in their sort of 40s and 50s, but we're also, you know, working with a lot of Australian developers, you know, the people from Half Brick in Brisbane and people like Luke Muscat, who are, I guess, in their 20s, who have been making games like Fruit Ninja and so on. So I guess it crosses a lot of generations in terms of developer community. I mean, you know, a lot of the arcade game developers, you know, people like Nolan Bushnell, who was responsible for Pong and, you know, setting up Atari, you know, they're in their late 60s, early 70s now. So we've got kind of quite a lot of generations who've been involved with playing games and making games, you know. So it's really crossing generations. I think that's the flavour of the show itself, you know. I think there will be, I mean, I'm in my mid-40s, I hate to say now, but, you know, it's, I've got a son who's 10, and I guess we'll be appealing to a whole range of different demographics
I think that's,
in the show.
That's a great thing about video games. It can, you can celebrate the older games, and for a lot younger people, you can now, I believe you can download on, there's an app now, I can't think of the name of it, you can download 80s games.
You can, you
which
can.
Which is amazing. And just to hear the feedback from people who are in their 20s saying, these games are great.
Yeah.
And you're
thinking
to yourself, are they?
I know.
Yes, they are. I never looked at them like that. Yeah. I just thought the newer games, the 3D games, of course, are mind-blowing. But then when you go back to these more two-dimensional ones, you realise they're actually really engaging and very well made.
Yeah, it's incredible. And we were just, before we came in to do the interview, we were talking about Hideo Kojima, who's one of the big Japanese developers that we're focusing on the exhibition. He's really well known for the Metal Gear Solid sort of franchise of games, which I guess are sort of shoot 'em ups. He really created a stealth action genre. So it's sort of, they're shoot 'em ups, but you can avoid, the game is kind of as much about avoiding kind of killing, shooting people, than actually kind of doing the act, if you like. Yeah, his first came out Metal Gear game came out in 97 when the PlayStation first appeared on the on the market, and he's now, there've been a series of these games, and we're on to the fourth one now, which we're also showcasing in the exhibition. And really, the sort of development in terms of you know, the rendering of graphics and so on has sort of changed massively, like during that period of time. I mean, it's really chalk and cheese, and we're only talking about, you know, 13, 14 years since the first game came out, but. We were playing kind of Metal Gear Solid in the office earlier on, as I get the pleasure of doing, kind of working on this exhibition at Acme, and also get paid to do it, which is fantastic.
It's like a toy developer.
But it's the original Metal Gear game is actually really kind of quite frightening. You know, I mean, it still makes you kind of jump. You know, when your opponents suddenly appear from around the corner, you didn't know they're appearing, and we were sort of. Yeah, just commenting on that earlier on, how, you know, the atmosphere of those very early games is still very powerful and still has resonance.
Gets your heart rate going.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Even though the rendering of the graphics is, you know, the 97 game is kind of chalk and cheese from the most recent
one. As far
one,
as looks go, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. So, yeah, so a lot of the early games still really hold up as an experience. And, of course, they're sort of quite widely available. So Nintendo, of course, is now allowing you to download kind of some of the early Mario and Zelda games onto the your own Wii at home, rather than having to search for the vintage software. So that gives a whole new generation of gamers the opportunity to play some of the early titles, which is wonderful.
I think it's fantastic. Can you give us a brief list of some of the games we can expect at Games Masters? You don't have to go chronological. I think.
Where do I start? I mean,
people will be squealing anyway.
I mean. I've told you about some of the arcade games.
Yeah, of course.
For the classics like Space Invaders and...
have you got the Star Wars one? Defender? The early Star Wars...
Well, we haven't got the early... that kind of cockpit. No. We had that in Game On, but we haven't got one of those in
that
Game Masters.
That was amazing.
We've kind of gone for the uprights in a way. We haven't got cocktails.
It's more space.
We're cramming in as much as we can. So we've got Hang On, you know, Yu Suzuki's kind of motorbike racing game.
Cool.
We've got the original Sonic the Hedgehog, you know, Yuji Naka, another Japanese developer, the Metal Gear Solid series of games. Ico by Fumito Ueda, great kind of Japanese developer. All of Tim Schafer's key titles, you know, Brutal Legend and Psychonauts and so on. Mizuguchi's Rez and Child of Eden. We've got SingStar, we've got Dance Central, we've got a whole load of really great indie titles. So games like Parappa the Rapper, again another music game by Matsuo Matsura, famous Japanese developer, but also some of those very well-known kind of indie games that are so big right now. Games like Minecraft by Notch Person. We've got Angry Birds.
Yes.
Writ Large. You know,
you can
play it on your iPhone, but we've got it on a big kind of 52-inch touchscreen in the gallery. Wow. We've got Fire Mint Real Racing kind of in HD, which is going to be brilliant, which is on the iPad. Yeah, so there's, I guess, as much as those sort of well-known developers and publishers are represented, like Sega and Sony and Nintendo, are also showcasing the indie scene, people like Jennifer Chen, Jonathan Blow, Jakub Dvorsky, and, you know, Half Brick in Brisbane, Fire Mint in Melbourne, you know, they're represented too. And we've commissioned their own game as well. So there's a Melbourne-based developer called Chocolate Liberation Front who developed a great Game Masters game, which will be an iPhone app, which is going to be fantastic. But more on that to come.
Yes, that sounds like mysterious. You've been mysterious there, but that's cool.
Yeah.
Very good idea.
So that's a game, it'll be free. You can download it, and then there'll be some great levels to unlock in the gallery. Big digital program goes with the show. So we're doing an ebook, iPhone game, and a lot of video conferencing activity as well, which is going to be good to really get the show out there.
It sounds like trans multimedia across all platforms. It's amazing.
It is. I mean, I think the best bits of it are all about the live experience, you know, like coming into Acme, coming to see the show, coming with your friends. Thursday nights, we're doing a program late night, kind of a bit like we did for the Tim Burton. Yep. So there'll be a lot of, I guess it sort of really takes that whole area of chip tunes kind of as a theme, you know, the 8-bit and 16-bit sound, but there are a lot of DJs that are really kind of working in that area doing interesting stuff. So
fantastic.
So we've got straight DJ nights, and then we've also got more fully programmed nights where there'll be a host and some of the game developers will be there. There'll be more of a party kind of atmosphere. So should be a lot of fun. So there'll be a lot of well-known Melbourne-based DJs who'll be hosting events. So I don't know, some of your listeners might know people like DJ Whiskey Houston and various others, and we're pulling all of that program together at the moment. But so fully programmed Thursday late night, and then we're open on Friday nights. There'll be a bar and drinks, and you'll be able to kind of go down into the show and bring your friends, have a bit of more of a chilled out Friday night kind of relaxed atmosphere with your friends. So that'll be great. And, you know, the show's open till 10 on Thursday and Friday. So, yeah, I think that'd be great for people that want a bit of activity after work.
Yeah. If you finish work at 6 or 7, then you want something to do, relax, play a game, hang out.
So you can hang out in the gallery for 3 or 4 hours and listen to some tunes. Yeah.
Now, one of the people I'm going to be interviewing or talking to is Kelly Santiago. Now, you mentioned her, you mentioned indie games, and I guess she's probably in the forefront of what's happening in the US.
That's right.
Particularly women in the exhibition. How many women do you know of that are going to be represented in the exhibition?
Well, Paulina Bozek, who I spoke about, who's the developer of SingStar and has obviously got her own label, and you know, Kelly Santiago. I mean, they're the two kind of key female developers that are represented in the show. And I guess, you know, women in games is like a really burgeoning kind of area, and that's sort of, I mean, there are a number of female developers that have obviously been working kind of over the years, but those big bodies of work that have been produced have, I guess, predominantly been, you know, produced by men, you know, I have to say, and that's the sort of legacy of the last 40 years. But certainly people like Kelly and Paulina and many, many other people are kind of really out there flying the flag for women in the games industry. And I think it's, you know, if you go to most studios kind of in Melbourne internationally these days, you'll see quite a mixture of kind of, I think that male to female ratio has kind of really changed a lot in the last...
Yeah, it seems to be at least 1 or 2 out of 5 or 6, and that's very positive.
It has changed. It's really positive. And yeah, I guess in terms of the market, I mean, it's interesting actually, because we've done a lot of research around this whole area, particularly kind of around the marketplace for gamers. When I first did Game On in 2002, I guess the market was quite skewed towards men as game players, you know, the guys out there, but women were buying a lot of the consoles. Like, the main buyers of consoles at that time in 2002 were...
Do you think they were buying them for the boys?
Buying them for the boys, probably. Maybe
keep
playing
them passive.
playing a lot themselves, but keeping it, you know, under the wire a little bit. Yeah. But I think that's really changed. We did some research in the lead up to this show, and you know, actually the audience for video games is kind of 50-50 now. It's completely mixed.
I was surprised how many women, and they seem to be, for females, it seems to be the app games.
Yeah, I think the way that this has changed is really in that whole pre-download kind of market. So I think Angry Birds was a really sort of a big force for change in that whole area. But there's also the whole area of, you know, social networking, you know, you've got games like Bejeweled and Farmville and so on.
Yep.
You know, all these, and a lot of, you know, the online Scrabble games, puzzle games, all that kind of thing, like, seem to be very mixed sort of demographic. So I think it's going to be a really interesting kind of show to just check out the audience and see who's coming. You know, I think it's going to be quite a mixed show. But we're doing a number of, I think a lot of live events are going to address that whole girl game kind of area. We're doing a lot of kind of more industry kind of focused events, which look at kind of women in games and women in the industry and so on, which is quite important.
Yes, I'll be doing an episode or two about that. Looking at that, women in games. I did one recently, a woman in comics, so looking at women in underground comics and genre stuff, and it's starting to balance out. It's really interesting.
Yeah.
Which is really healthy, I think. But
I mean, you know, we haven't been looking to try and tick any boxes in the show. We've been it's trying to just show the best work out there, and Kelly Santiago is in there because she's been producing really interesting work, so that's and I think that's how she'd want to be represented by her work,
exactly.
Not because she's a woman particularly. But
Well, I did read something recently about pay parity and women and stuff like that, just quickly. Basically, it seems to be that, you know, they're starting to get women into computer science and in engineering and stuff like that. And I think that's going to certainly change the environment in the future.
Yeah, I think it will.
They're directed
definitely.
That way.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely changing. I mean, certainly in the kind of last 10-15 years I've been really involved in curating games exhibitions, as I said, you walk into a studio and the kind of complexion and gender within that studio will be different now to what it was like in 2002, you know.
Very interesting. Now, in your opinion, where next for video games? Do you think video games are going to be more exercises of like more virtual kind of systems, more avatar type of things, or do you think people will still love the console, even go back and revisit things like arcade games?
I think they will. I mean, it's interestingly enough, I mean, you know, Firemint are just about to, who make games like Flight Control, Melbourne-based company, are just about to launch an arcade game kind of their own. So they're, you know, and which seems bizarre probably to most people because they make iPhone and Android apps, app-based games. So, you know, that there's a sort of circularity, really. I mean, you know, we're on Bourke Street now, just up the road. There's a thriving kind of arcade across the road from here.
I know, yeah.
So the arcades are still around. You know, big publishers and hardware manufacturers are still going to be making consoles. You know, PC games still exist. And, you know, we've got this big new kind of area of iPhone and Android games. So I think all of these platforms are going to continue to sort of run in parallel. I mean, it is true to say that, you know, we all know that sort of software sales are kind of on the decline to a certain extent. But it's interesting. I mean, playing games like the latest Metal Gear Solid game, you know, I mean, they've been developed by huge teams of people. You know, you can play that game for 20 hours. You know, it has a huge amount of visual richness and depth, which can only be produced by big teams spending many, many years kind of producing games and companies putting huge investment into that. So I hope that still continues and flourishes as a sort of a media form, because it's been really important kind of in the whole history of video games development. But equally, people are still looking for content for free. You know, they want to download stuff onto their phones and they're prepared to make small purchases and buy things for 50 cents or a dollar. And I think that's going to continue to grow. People want to make those small purchases as well. But, you know, JB Hi-Fi and EB Games are still out there selling software. So I don't know. We're showing quite a lot of 3D games in the exhibition, and I was really pleased to be able to kind of select. You know, we've got Sonic Collection in the show, which is going to be in 3D. And that whole domestic market for 3D is really kind of burgeoning. But I think what we're going to see over the next 5 years is obviously the TV at home is going to become a PC. It is. It's happening already, really.
Because I saw the Kinect billboards, the big ones, they're doing Star Wars, and it's a very family-orientated marketing campaign. I don't know if you've seen those ones.
That's right, yeah. So it's really a PC platform. You can download music and films and games and so on. So I think you're going to have that access within your lounge room in the way that you perhaps haven't had kind of in the past. So that's really exciting. I mean, you know, so that's where it's going in the kind of commercial domain and in the lounge room. I mean, I think in terms of exhibitions, you know, we've sort of looked at Game On, which is the history of Game Masters, is really about those really important kind of key developers that have made such a huge contribution to taking games as a media form into the place it's in now. But beyond that, I think there's really opportunity for cultural organisations like ACME to really focus down on particular kind of developers, publishers and so on who have made such a huge contribution. So, I mean, recently in Taiwan, there was a huge exhibition that focused on Blizzard and the work that they've been doing over the last sort of 15 to 20 years, which was the first big retrospective of a single studio.
Oh, okay.
And that had hand-drawn artwork, digital concept artwork, had some playable games, models and so on. And I think there are a number of exhibitions that could be done in that area. There are a number of developers who have really strong kind of track records who have kind of archived the material they produce, their drawings, their storyboards, their digital concept artwork, their 3D models and so on. And, you know, it's equally possible to create some really great shows. So I'm looking at a few ideas in that area now.
Yeah,
maybe
okay.
more developer and studio focused
shows. So you've already moved
shows.
On to the next project by the
sound
of it in your
quite,
mind.
But I'm nearly there.
Now, that brings me to a question before I let you go, actually, because we have been going for a while, but it's fascinating. I'm really enjoying this, of course. Now, Conrad, will this exhibition go on tour in its entirety that it would be now?
Yeah, it is. It is going on tour. We've been planning it as a touring exhibition, really. You know, since we kind of first conceived the exhibition, but we're not in a position to announce where it's going yet.
Of course.
But you know, we're talking to a number of venues in different countries, kind of around the world.
Wow,
and that's
fantastic.
You know, the show's been made and kind of R&D'd and created in Melbourne, so it's a great advertisement for
very much so,
Australian developers and Australian cultural institutions. So, yeah, that's our intention, and yeah, so we'll more on that kind of that we'll announce as time goes on. But it's very exciting, and it will be touring, and I think it will be great success.
Fantastic. One last thing: if you had to choose, what game?
God, that's so hard, really. It's sort of where do you start with this? I mean, I don't know. I mean,
you've always had a love for games, obviously.
Yeah, I have. I mean, I sort of I write a little bit about this in the book that we produced to accompany the exhibition. But I'm from a place called Reading, kind of in England, which is just outside sort of satellite town.
Isn't Kate Winslet from there?
She is. How did you know that? How did you know
Trivia Pursuit.
Kate Winslet and Kenneth Branagh, yeah.
If you've got a Trivia Pursuit game, I'll probably play it.
Yeah, they were part of a really amazing kind of theatre company in Reading. Anyway, I didn't hang out with them, but I hang out in this this arcade called the Crystal Rooms, which is part of a cinema, like an Odeon chain of cinemas in the UK. And that's... I was just a kind of kid, I guess, when pinball was starting to kind of die out and arcade games were starting to come in.
Yep.
So I just entered at that transition. So I really, games like Defender and Asteroids and Pac-Man are really, they're really part of my upbringing. But so I'd have to say, like a game like Asteroids, you know, sort of vector game, you know, from the late 70s, really important to me. But, you know, through developing this show, having got to know, we're playing Brutal Legend, one of Tim Schafer's games earlier on, which is, he's a great script writer, narrative's so important in his games, and that really, really funny game about heavy, you know, you wouldn't have thought that you could make a video game which is about heavy metal, which is also an adventure game, kind of work in a humorous kind of context, but he's really kind of done it with that game. And then, you know, some of the indies, you know, I've been playing a lot of Minecraft recently, I've been playing kind of Halo 1 with my son. You know, I mean, there's just so many titles that are kind of interest out there. But I think getting to know the indie sector has been really interesting. So getting to know people like Jonathan Blow, Kelly Santiago, who you mentioned, Jennifer Chen, their work has been really interesting. And so we've got some of those key titles in the show. And then for me, being able to kind of include the really important Australian scene in the show, it's been a great pleasure getting to know some of their work, and some of the local developers like Firemint and Halfbrick has been great.
Wow. Okay. Now before...
So sorry, that wasn't one game.
No, that wasn't. You sort of skirted around that. There is no absolute answer, I guess.
And there never
can
be.
It's too hard.
Yeah.
No, true. It's like saying, what's your favourite film? It's just not... You just can't do it. I understand. Now, I want to say thank you so much for coming on to Sci-Fi and Scream this evening, Conrad Bodman. It's been fantastic.
It's a pleasure, and we're looking forward to welcoming all your loyal audiences and fans to Acme once
exciting.
The show's on.
It's getting very exciting, the build-up. Yeah. Any last comments before I turn off the machine?
Well, I think, you know, if you think you're not a gamer but you've got Angry Birds on your phone, then this is definitely a show for you. Yeah, this isn't a show just for the traditional hardcore gamers, you know. I think this is a show for everybody. You know, come along, bring your friends, and why not think about coming on a Thursday or Friday night and bring your friends, having a drink at Acme, and really sort of chilling out and enjoying what is this very long history of video games, nearly 40 years now. And I think it could be a great show for you. So come along and come and see us.
Didn't it start with just the humble oscillator? Wasn't that the Pong?
Well, it did.
It
that's right. It
was started sort of with that.
Yeah, it was very sort of this sort of this computer called the PDP-1, which was a sort of research computer that a lot of these early arcade developers had access to in sort of research labs, particularly at MIT.
That's
so
right, MIT.
That was where it all started, really, kind of in the late 60s. And I would say, you know, games started in the labs, kind of moved into the arcade, then moved into the home, then moved online, and now they've kind of moved onto your phone as well. So that's the technology trajectory. And some of the people that we're looking at kind of in the exhibition have kind of literally kind of worked through all of that over the last 40 years.
Wow.
So, yeah, but many people who come along will just think that video games began with the iPhone, you know. And I guess
certainly
the show
put them
will
right
demonstrate
that
you're not quite right, if that's what you think.
Now, website, where can people go to find out? And dates, of course, when does it kick off?
Yeah, well, the exhibition opens on the... better get this right, actually.
I've got the 28th
you, Yeah, the exhibition
June?
Kind of opens on the 28th of June, finishes on the 28th of October. And if you kind of come onto the Acme website, it'll take you to the Game Masters kind of microsite. You can find out all the information about the show there, where to buy tickets. You can download the ebook that we've produced, the free game, and you can find out all about the people that we're including in the show.
Great.
So,
is that up already, the ebook?
That's not up yet. We've got a kind of landing page at the moment. So the main website's coming out kind of around the beginning of May. So
Check exciting. Fantastic. Yeah. Thank you again for coming on to Sci-Fi and Scream.
That's a pleasure.
Thanks
for having
me. Hope
to
see you perhaps a Thursday night down there chilling out, playing some Asteroids or something.
Yeah. You bet.
Yeah, cheers.
All right,
thank
cheers.
You.
Thanks.
Cool. All right.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.